temperamental thing. Oh, good evening. I'm so glad you made it out. I was going to ask for you. I have to tell you, I was came out and I thought about the recording. I said, I don't need to record it tonight. And then I came out here and she just comes and finds it after digging in my drawer.
Thank you.
And now it's being temperamental. I've heard some weeks where we didn't need to hear it a second time. All depends. What is that?
It's leftover something from the Nuke's party.
That's a cookie from Adam.
Okay, great. I don't have like a sexy gold thing someplace. Yeah. That's good. Did you get one of these? Have to show it to me. I don't think I read most of these.
But it has a new application.
I'm sure that it does. That would be really good. Should I read 80? Okay, if you say so. Yes. It's close. You know how many there are? Okay. There are 81. Thank you. So the book is the Tao Te Ching, the Book of the Way. And this is chapter 80. If a country is governed wisely, its inhabitants will be content. They enjoy the labor of their hands and don't waste time inventing labor-saving machines. Since they dearly love their homes, they aren't interested in travel. There may be a few wagons and boats, but these don't go anywhere. There may be an arsenal of weapons, but nobody ever uses them. People enjoy their food, take pleasure in being with their families, spend weekends working in their gardens, delight in the doings of their neighborhood. And even though the next country is so close that people can hear its roosters crowing and its dogs barking, they are content to die of old age without ever having gone to see it. I think we're really supposed to get Beth Sider's comments this point. So she said that's deep. And it is. It's so deep, we don't even need to read another one. I will repeat it. You know, give yourself some space,
right?
So that in the translation, as you hear it, think about the many countries that there are. If a country is governed wisely, its inhabitants will be content. They enjoy the labor of their hands and don't waste time inventing labor-saving machines. Since they dearly love their homes, they aren't interested in travel. There may be a few wagons and boats, but these don't go anywhere. There may be an arsenal of weapons, but nobody ever uses them. People enjoy their food, take pleasure in being with their families, spend weekends working in their gardens, delight in the doings of the neighborhood. And even though the next country is so close that people can hear its roosters crowing and its dogs barking, they are content to die of old age without ever having gone to see it. That's a good one. I would love to hear just one word that you think that this is reflecting on. Just pick one word that comes to mind when you hear that passage.
Self.
Is that what you said? Self. Oh. Thank you. Self. Self. Internal home.
Perfection.
Perfection.
Internal
kind of. Contentment. Yeah.
War.
Yeah. All of these things. The word that comes to mind for me is keep it simple, stupid. You know, kiss. It's the one word. Well, I think the answer's in the statement. Something about all of those things, having a sense of contentment with ourself, being willing to be at home in our internal place. Seems like a very quick path to perfection to me. Came out and I said, I have no idea, because I was just completely dead asleep before we came out here. I didn't even hear the bell. I must be like Pavlov's dog. It was like 10 to 8, and I just popped up and ran out here, or walked or sauntered. And yet the passage felt very much like the place that I was in that resting place. where there's just a kind of simplicity, it feels like, for me in my life that's not so much to do with, I actually just came from another country and I'm not quite content to die without having seen a little of this and a little of that. But in that place that we have that is closer hell, the country of our own selves, I'm very, very content to just be here and to work with what I have, to not try to figure out how to have another life, right? How to have some life other than the one that's in front of the one that I have. It seems like that's what we're often trying to do. We're trying to figure out, how do I hurry up through this particular moment and get to another one? What kind of book can I read, or, I don't know, video can I watch, or a guru can I see? You know, so I don't have to work on the material that I have in front of me myself. And a little bit of a labor-saving device, labor-saving machine. And so much of what's out there, so much of, certainly of the Tao Te Ching, and books like it, and the many, many books that have come since it, many, many teachers in their many, many forms, keep turning us around and pointing us back to ourselves, saying, there's no place to go. There's nothing to do. There's just what you have. There's just who you are. And lots of our time and energy is spent saying, no, no, that's not simple enough. That's not complicated enough. There must be something more difficult that I can get involved with to really solve it. And that often perplexes me personally. And I say, you know, well, there's not really much for you to do, just go back to yourself. And people go, okay, but then what? Okay, but are you with yourself first? But yeah, I know. I'll get back to myself, but then what? And this becomes the story that we're moving on, trying to figure out how to get someplace else, or what there is, what's going to happen once we've done that. As if there's something actually else to do. And I'm curious about where we got the story from, that there is something else to do, anything else to do, once we've come back home. Where are you?
So, even though you have already chosen the passage, maybe this is in the vein of someone saying, okay, and then what? But I don't need it to be. Just trying to integrate what has been heavy on my heart. Mm-hmm. Finding out what's going on with the evacuees from the Gulf Coast and with the reconstruction plans that don't include a lot of the low-income African-American and other people of color. Just
I'm not sure. Are you asking me what's going on with them? I'm not sure what the question is.
Not so much what's going on, but how to bring our practice to that.
How to bring our practice to
our understanding and involvement and discussions around what is happening with the evacuees and with the future plans there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just because even though geographically it isn't home,
mm-hmm.
it feels close to home.
So I want to encourage a kind of rigor amongst us as practitioners to really think about what it is we're wanting from our practice. So I want you to really tell me, what do you want? What really, in this moment, do you want in relationship to that particular condition?
So until that's a state that I'm in continuously,
mm-hmm.
then I deal with my everyday life, and I think that because sometimes my work can try and strategize how to make a difference,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to make sure that I understood deeply from a spiritual perspective the best way to, I think both in my mind, understand it, and then in my actions,
mm-hmm.
approach it.
How to understand it. Okay. So Marie started to tell you about these 10 practices and principles. And you know, the truth is that I can just prattle on about anything. If you just throw a topic out there, it doesn't really matter what it is. I could just go on about it, and I can eventually find some little tie and say, this is the Dharma, and I can even find a text for you, connect it to a text. And if I had a good enough memory, which I don't usually, I could find a story, an appropriate story, and all of those good things. And that's usually what teachers do in response to questions that are tossed out at them. We kind of, you know, wend our way into some hopefully neatly tied and brilliant, dazzling response. I'm going to take a slightly different course and say that we get confused about, in general, not particular to you. We get confused, and it's easy to get confused when we try very hard to get the focus of the relative world into the container of our practice. And we do it in this way that's still of the relative world mind, right? And I talked a little bit about that at the day long, that we try to take something that was really designed for just us and apply it to something that is out there somewhere. So something that was designed for us to find and meet our own truth, our own perfection, and we want to, it makes sense, to take it and get it out to meet all of the world's conditions and causes and situations. In a way that feels satisfactory. And the truth is, this particular practice, and most spiritual practices, were not designed, and they're not really even interested in what's going on in the world in some very specific way. It's not interested in Katrina, it's not interested in black people and low-income people and how they're being treated. It isn't interested in a particular way in any of that. Our practice is really interested, designed, exists for the purpose of changing our minds. And everything else in between is pretty much moot. It's, and especially this practice about going inward, because it was really designed for monastics. It was designed for people that had at least entire rainy seasons to sit around and be looking inward, checking out their own internal space, staying in their own country, not worrying about anybody's roosters and anybody's dogs. And we find ourselves, especially now, in this strange kind of mixed up situation where, as lay people, for the most part, in a lay world, we're doing what has generally been seen as a monastic practice, a practice that a great deal of is oriented towards you having lots and lots of time available to doing that, and you're pretty much focusing on that, that you have actually put aside your worldly thoughts, including Katrina and low-income people and all of these other things, to focus on your internal world, your country. In fact, most of the design of spiritual traditions says all of that is a distraction. Leave it out there. It doesn't need to be here. None of it is yelling at you to go forth, take on the world, then come back and we'll talk about it. It's mostly saying, just stay here. Just stay here. Don't worry about that. So we're kind of caught in this in-between space because it neither seems realistic for any of us at this moment, right? Or, and maybe it does, and if it does, we can do something about that, to spend all of our time, literally all of it, in a formal practice. Hopefully we're always practicing, but we're not always in a formal practice. Nor does it seem quite appropriate or realistic for any of us to just pretend the world is not happening. Right? So we're just like, what do we do with this? In fact, people at different moments have said, it seems kind of self-indulgent to be sitting here on retreat or on a cushion or, you know, sometimes they say, you know, something about their navel, staring at their navel, while all of these other things are going on in the world. And really, I could say, well, if you work on your practice, you will look differently at this situation, and you will then know what the right thing is to do. Not really true. I mean, it's true in some ways, but it's not really true. And when I say really, I mean in the relative world, the world that you're dealing with, the world that, like, has this conflict, that has this messiness, that's very, very problematic. In that world, our practice does not fix any of these things. In fact, if nothing else, we, with this increased awareness of how tragic, really, human beings can be, how flawed we can be, it actually becomes even more difficult for us to exist in this place. And so a yearning comes forth that says, I see all this suffering. How can I take my practice and deal with this? You know, because like good eggs, we want the suffering to be reduced. And you have ended up telling the story of why what's called the turning of the wheel from the Theravadin or Hinayana practice, right, the lower vehicle practice, to the Mahayana or greater vehicle practice. From the practice that was about just ourselves to the practice that became about all beings. And the trick about that, or trickiness about that practice, is it's actually was never stated by Buddha anywhere. We don't have any text anywhere where Buddha said, okay, once you're done, go out in the world and fix it. So new texts had to be written. Because after several hundred years, people said, surely, had he been around long enough to get all these monks, do this monastery, get everybody to work out how they behave with each other, fix the indifferences between men and women, and all of these other things that were coming up in just the kind of basicness of getting in a space together and practicing, which is, if anybody that lives here knows, they can attest to the truth of that, the kind of like fundamental things that you have to deal with, the situation that's right in front of you. Surely, had Buddha lived long enough, he would have then said, okay, now go out into the world. Take your practice. This is how you do it. He had 80-some-odd years. It wasn't enough time. And everybody was busy fighting and fussing once he died, and so they took another several hundred years before they got it together. So the Mahayana teachings, the greater vehicle, or the whose ideal is what's called the Bodhisattva ideal, said, but this is all implied. It's implied that once you achieve awareness, a state, an awakened state yourself, that you would go out and work for the sake of all beings. It's implied. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. And people argued back and forth and said, well, then we should all just stay. And someone a little further along said, well, it's also implied that, in fact, as you are doing your practice, you are doing it for the sake of all beings, that you don't even have to wait until you've achieved great awakening, that you begin to apply your life right here and now. Further, if you achieve great awakening, you're probably not going to give a shit about what's going on in the world. So you hold it off so that you can stay and work for the sake of all beings. That's the Bodhisattva ideal. So you're living with the complexities of what it means to be a Bodhisattva. That it's not neat. You may want to have like great, perfect enlightenment and bring that to the situation in front of you, but the truth is, if you have it, you're not going to care. You're going to be like, whatever, they'll work it out. So instead, you do what you are doing, Attend to your life. Hold the complexities. Do the practice that you do, knowing, wishing, offering, committing to have it serve all beings, and have a basic kind of faith that that in and of itself is the greater way, the wider path, what will ultimately save all beings. And you may not see it in your lifetime. But that's your commitment. And you would only have this commitment and could only make this commitment and could only be even be asking this question because it has arisen in you, it has occurred to you that in fact you would like other people to not suffer. You would like the people that are committing these kinds of acts to not be in their place of suffering that lets them treat some people in one way and some people in another way. You would like the people that are at the other end of the situation, getting the short end of the stick, to not suffer as a result of the behavior of all of the many things that participate. And you yourself, I'm sure, would like to come up with wonderful strategic solutions that would bear upon the situation and other situations that would begin to alleviate the suffering. And I'm sure somewhere in there you would be at least a small bit hopeful that your own suffering would be relieved. You said your heart is heavy. They call Avalokiteshvara, he who hears the cries of the world. They don't call, this is the Bodhisattva of compassion, they don't call Avalokiteshvara he who fixes the cries of the world. He who hears the cries of the world and makes the commitment, the vow, the awakened being vow, the great warrior vow. In Tibetan text, the sattva in bodhisattva is not translated just as being, it's translated often as great warrior. It's understood, right, that you couldn't just be a regular old being to take on this kind of commitment, this kind of vow. So this. A great warrior of awakening hears the cries of the world and holding off their own complete, perfect enlightenment. In the Heart Sutra, you hear it. Anyutara Samyak Sambodhi. That's what it means. Anyutara Samyak Sambodhi. Great, perfect enlightenment, complete. They hold that off. I'm just going to be here in the mud, in the messiness, in the complexity, in the trying to figure out a solution while I still just work on this practice. That's all there is. So very similar to just going back home.
Then how does the... Because I was under the impression that part of this center or part of urban peace was both the spiritual and the social activism.
Mm-hmm.
So how does social activism fit in with what you just explained?
You go and you do what you do. You work with the complexities. You work with the muddiness. You do what you do, and you still do your practice. They're not opposed to one another. You still do that. If you're asking, like, how do you make it, like, feel all right and fit all perfectly? Yeah, that's not, what I'm saying is that that's not realistic. So you do, as a bodhisattva, right, go out and do the action in the world. you do. You go out, you do what you can do. Couldn't you want me to tell you exactly what you can do? I don't have the answer to that. I wish I did. I mean, but you do what you feel compelled to do. And you continue your own practice so that you're able to see clearly what is driving your urge to do whatever it is you're doing. And, you know, sometimes it's not so clean. Sometimes it's, you know, you're trying to heal some old wound, or you want to make yourself feel better, or you want to look good. And so the continued practice is about cleaning that up. And you still work. And you still move forward. You still act. Does that make sense?
It does, but then it makes me think, well, Avalokiteshvara did fix everyone's problems. So are we attempting something that we shouldn't even attempt? I don't think we're attempting to fix other people's problems.
Mm-hmm.
But by doing, are we already engaging in something that we shouldn't be?
Well, you started out asking me about your practice. So I'm not, it's a two different, there's a different discussion to talk about the center and the ideas of the center and to talk about your practice. So I want to respond to what I'm being asked. So you can clarify, which is why I asked you to clarify. Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything to clarify.
Okay. Are we doing something that we're not supposed to do? All I'm saying is and when I say Avalokiteshvara's name is not he who fixes, I'm not saying who does not try to fix. I'm saying there's no guarantee. It doesn't mean that Avalokiteshvara fixes everything and is successful at every effort. That's what I'm saying. That's the meaning of that.
That was my
message. Uh-huh. Is that clear?
So, yes, commitment to the action.
Absolutely.
Attachment to the action.
Yes, I'm saying exactly. You know, for me, stuck in one line, really, the same thing as what the center is about, which is you do work, you do keep on. Why? Because my understanding is that when you sit down and you begin to see clearly and hear clearly, you hear the cries, the ones that you shut out before, the ones that you were able to ignore, yourself, those of your own cries, right? Your own healing, your own wounds, your own suffering, as well as those of others, that this is a natural progression. And so, not only do you, it's almost impossible to not go and work on behalf on the behalf of other beings. Because if you don't, one just must wonder what you're doing in there, right? You're either having to close your ears to what you're hearing, because if you are witnessing your own suffering, for sure you're witnessing the suffering of other beings. As you clear up the noise that's in your own mind, for sure you begin to hear the cries of the world. Does that mean that no one was an activist before they got here? No. But what you hear, the way you hear it, and where you're hearing it from, thus where you're responding from, changes dramatically. And so you still may continue in the exact same work that you do, but you continue it from a different place. It becomes less about feeding your stuff, right? Your trips that you bring to the situation, and more about actually responding to what's true and what's in front of you, and doing that from a clearer and clearer place as you move on. Does that make sense? I think you, now I understand where you I was making up something that you didn't understand. You were frowning. Do you want to ask something? Okay. Now I know. cat's out of the bag, I did the same thing that all of these teachers usually do. It's wended it around and found its way back to the Dharma. What can you do?
beings be granted with the strength, determination, and wisdom to extinguish anger and reject violence as a way. May all suffering cease, and may I seek, find, and fully realize the love and compassion that already lives within me, and allow them to inspire and permeate my every action. May I exercise the precious gift of choice and the power of change that makes me uniquely human and is the only true path to liberation. May I swiftly reach complete effortless freedom so that my fearless, unhindered action be of benefit.